from Matthew 25, verses 37 through 39. This is the heart, or the middle, literally, of the judgment of the nations, if you will. Listen for the word of God. Then those who are righteous will reply to the human one, to the king, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and give you clothes to wear? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? Here ends the reading.
Thank you, Brian, Kathy, Carol, Tiffany, and Drew, for inviting me to be a part of this conversation with all of you today. It is always a pleasure to be with you virtually or in person. I'm going to start sharing my screen in just a second, but precatory to that, I just want to suggest that when we're talking about stewardship, I think we're talking about something a whole lot bigger than what we might think of as the annual campaign, whether you do that in the spring or the fall. We're not talking about an annual campaign to raise funds for the church. That can certainly be a part of how we do stewardship, how we raise the funds and the enthusiasm for doing the work of the church. But today, what Drew and I are going to talk about is stewardship in a larger context. And I really think about it as, what are we doing to take care of the things that matter to us? But the question of what is stewardship? There's two definitions that I really like. The first one is the responsible overseeing and protection of something considered worth caring for and preserving. So that becomes personal, right? And it's a question for yourself. What do I consider worth caring for and preserving? And there's another definition, because of course, there's never just one way of looking at something, that says the careful and responsible management of something entrusted to one's care. So there's commonalities in both of these. And then there's a difference that I think actually works together that's really important for us as we frame what stewardship is in our life. It is a requirement for us to notice what we've been given, what's been entrusted to us, and then for us to take the time to really value and appreciate what that thing is. And then how we express that is the actual act of stewardship. I want to contrast that with generosity, because they work together, right? Once you know what it is that matters to you, and you understand what you've been given, but they're not the same thing. And sometimes we conflate them, but I think it's important to sort of parse them out. So what is generosity? Showing a readiness to give more of something as money or time than is true. The second one is characterized kindly spirit. So when I read these two definitions of generosity, part of what I'm seeing here is what I'm reading is that we are asked not just to show up and do enough, but to push ourselves a little and to grow in our spirit and our spirit of giving. And it's not just a single growth, it's a continual growth, right? And it's not necessarily about, can I give more money every year? It's a, how can I continue to grow as a person, doing a little bit more than what might be expected of me? So, you know, in project and process management parlance, it's that idea of constant improvement, even if it's just like a little bit, like how can I do a little bit more? And maybe it's how can I do a little bit more as I think about those things that matter to me? Can I be more deeply connected to them? Can I be more expressive of how that matters to me? You know, and again, it doesn't have to be going from running a mile to running a marathon. It might be running a mile to running a mile and a tenth, but it's challenging ourselves to grow in that generosity by being self-reflective and continuing always to do that work. So I'm going to shift now into talking about our values, because our values, of course, are how we actually express and live in the world. What I have on here are these timeless guiding principles that don't require justification. They're important to you. So this is a little bit of that informing of what matters to me, what do I consider worth caring for? And it also helps you to think about, because, we heard this morning from Kathy praying for Ukraine, praying for your state and the fires, out here in the West, praying for water always. The myriad challenges in the world, we cannot solve all of them, even though they all deserve to be solved, but each individually, we have to figure out how we can best show up and solve that problem that's in front of us, right? Because otherwise it can be overwhelming. So I think it's important for us to look at our values, to look at what drives our choices, to help us then align our choices to how we can be most effective in responding to God's call for us as stewards individually. So I don't need to read everything on this screen, but understanding also that there's a distinction between my personal values and corporate values in the church, right? I might bring something individually to the church and understand that that has to fit into a bigger picture of what my particular congregation might be doing. And those two things might not be exactly the same. Now, they may not be in conflict. Hopefully what they do is they synergistically work together. But understanding that I am not the church, I am part of it, can be important also in thinking about how we show up and do our work in a congregation. We're going to have a few minutes for discussion. What I'd like you to do is talk to each other about what 3 to 5 values you picked and why.
Welcome back, everybody, to the large group. Thanks for taking time in your sharing. Part of what I'll be helping to do on this front end of our presentation is to facilitate these kind of whole group feedback sessions. So I'm not asking you to share everything that you talked about for the last 10 minutes in your group, but are there highlights, pieces that you heard, something that surprised you that you'd like to share with the whole group? We can just do this in popcorn fashion. Remember to unmute yourself if you're muted, and I'd invite you to be lean of speech, but please share.
A common thread in our group was community, caring about each other.
Thanks.
In our group, we talked a lot about spiritual growth and how important it is to reinforce our beliefs, validate ourselves, and learn more about our community and participate in our church community.
Thank you.
In our particular group, I think one that was brought up that was novel, but we thought was important, was pleasure, because mm-hmm. everybody needs that in life. It's not being hedonistic or anything, but part of a healthy life is pleasure. But the other thing was helping, I think, was an important aspect that several people brought up.
Thank you.
We brought up justice and what justice looked like on an individual level. And we talked too about how justice, about the Presbyterian Disaster Assistance and how they've been working, like in Ukraine and other places, for needs and for justice.
Thank you.
We spent some time talking about risk. One of our participants listed that, and we observed that it was unique, but yet we kind of then talked a little bit about how that weighs in congregations and in our own lives. So that was interesting. Hmm.
Drew, I would just add what Mark had mentioned, that pleasure not being hedonistic, but then we, when we also talked about laughter, added that to the values list, but to balance that out with leadership and growth, that this, that combination of values, there needed to be some complementariness on the package to kind of move forward.
Hmm. Thank you. Bringing forth your responses, and I'll turn it back over to Maggie.
In this section, what I'd like us to do is talk a little bit about why we act as stewards. So we're starting to, you know, to think about, you know, where are our motivations and our drivers in our life coming from? And then when we start to speak specifically about stewardship as an action in our lives, right? How do we actually go out and do these things? Asking the question, well, why do we do them? You know, we all in some way express that we are caring for something that we value, right? Not just everyone here, but everyone in the world, right? So you can make choices about your actions, and those are going to be expressive in some way of what your values are and how you go about taking care of what is actually important to you. So I want to look at a few different ways of thinking about what that why might be for you. And this first one is reflective of the language from Deuteronomy, right? It's an obligation. It's in Hebrew, a mitzvot, which means commandment. A lot of people think that doing a mitzvah or a mitzvot is doing charity or a good deed. That's actually not. The word means commandment. It's a requirement. So thinking about, do I show up as a steward because I feel like I'm required to? Or am I doing this for my own spiritual growth and wanting to serve in the world, right? It's a slightly different take on this. Again, in Hebrew, the language is tikkun olam, which means to be a repairer of the world or a repairer of the breach, right? This idea, not so much that I'm compelled to do it, but that I'm choosing to do it because I want to be a healer, and this is what's helping me to grow. So another option for thinking about, what is it that motivates me here, right? Are we doing this? And this is where we talk a lot in the Presbyterian Church lately, I think, is talking about being grateful for the gifts of God and acknowledging the values that we've learned in the church. That's another piece of this. And again, what I'm asking is for you to think about what motivates me, you know, what gets me out of bed in the morning to go do the work. Another that I think is interesting is this idea of responding to God, right? Not being compelled by God, but responding and being in relationship. And someone mentioned when Drew was asking the question about what came up for you, this idea of justice, doing justice in the world. And again, the Hebrew here is tzedakah. That's another word, again, that gets translated often as charity, but actually means justice. So it's doing the work to care for others, not in this this charitable way, but because this is the work of God's justice in the world, right? And part of what I'm hoping that we see as we look at all of these things is there isn't one right way. So when you go back to your congregations and you're talking about, you know, and then we're going to take this to, like, how do we engage people in stewardship at the congregational level? Understanding that one message is not going to speak to everyone. That we want to talk about stewardship throughout the year. We want to talk about stewardship in a lot of different ways because we're a complex body of people and we're each going to respond to our call to stewards in different ways. So just one message really isn't necessarily going to speak to everyone and motivate everyone that is most effective for them to be showing up. So I like this from Psalm 24. And of course, we often use this in stewardship campaigns. And I use that word specifically. But why do we act as stewards? Because the earth is the Lord and all that's in it, the world and all who live in it. Right? We act as stewards, understanding again, if we go back to the very beginning of the presentation, that we are a reflection of God in the world, a part of God in the world, and that the world is God, right? And so we are integrally responsible and connected to being a part of actually taking care of the world and all that is in it. So what I want to do now is send you back into great breakout rooms. What I want you to talk about now, why do you personally act as a steward? What's your motivation or what motivates you? So that question of, you know, the different perspectives that I offered, which of those resonates for you?
Welcome back, folks. I'm seeing us coming back together in the big room. Hope you had some good conversations in your smaller groups. And let's follow that same practice of just an opportunity to share out with the whole group of some of the whys of stewardship for you. What motivates you and your generosity in your life? So what did you hear in your groups that you'd like to share with the wider group?
Okay, in my group, the common theme was helping and making a difference, and thinking we can make a difference. Me personally, it was my statement was, I'm just foolish enough to think that I can. So that was me.
Thank you.
In my group, three separate things kind of came together. The first was, obligation, following the commandment. But then you realize that's a response to God, God's commandment. And because it's God's commandment, it doesn't feel like commandment, but it gives us meaning, gives a life shape and meaning. So.
Beautiful, thank you.
Well, we're all working hard to help other people in our congregation. But in the end result is that helps us maybe even more so to be better people.
Thank you.
In our group just in the last few minutes, we talked about the idea of God being extravagant and lavish in God's generosity. And that if we each have the image of God in us, that can call forth in us a response of extravagant, lavish giving and living, and that can help us to be more authentically human and more fully human, and at the same time manifest more of who God is in us.
Thank you.
So part of what we're doing is we're very broad on the idea of values and stewardship and what it is that motivates us. And now I want us to be sort of narrowing into what does that tactically look like in our lives, right? So how do we actually do this? We're starting to understand our motivation. We're starting to think about, you know, the why of it. And now we talk about, like, so how do we actually go out and do stewardship? And the first thing I'd like to offer, and we've heard all of this before, right, is that we give our time. That's how we do it. We give our talent. We give our treasure. These are the three pieces of stewardship that we often talk about, right? But there's a fourth. I had an opportunity to learn with a really brilliant individual, and he added testimony, that it isn't enough for us to be doing it, but keeping it to ourselves. That part of our obligation as Christians is to also share verbally what it is that we're doing and telling people about why we're doing it, so that it's not just something that is for us alone. And the suggestion that he had was that you should be activating two of these areas in your life at all times, not necessarily the same two all the time, but that there should be at least two pieces of this that you're working on and recognizing that it will change throughout your life, right? And I really like this quote from James. I know that I had a debate recently with a pastor who said, well, this quote is really about works righteousness. And that can be true, but we're not talking about works righteousness or works as a way to grace right now. What we're talking about, and why I like this passage in particular and thinking about the how of what we do, is because it reminds us that we do need to be activating two pieces. We need to be in our faith and trusting God, and we need to be doing something to express that trust at the same time, right? It's not enough to just have the trust, but we need to be active people in the world expressing what God looks like in our life. And of course, this is the passage that, or part of the passage that Kathy shared with us at the beginning from Matthew, right? That we are called to understand we're in relationship with God, that we're in relationship with Jesus, and that doing something, expressing our how of how we do things, is a part of being in that relationship. There's an active component there. So then I want to ask, what is your stewardship, right? What is it that you actually do as a steward? How do you express this in your life? And I have a few questions for you here. The first is, who taught you? Who taught you stewardship? The second part of that is, what did they teach you? And then finally, the question is, and what do you offer to the world? What do you offer to the people around you as a steward in this world? And I hope that you'll have a rich conversation here, and then Drew will lead us in some conversation as we come back after the break as well. So what I'd like to do now is take some of that conversation we had and just offer you some ideas of how do you take this back to your congregation now? How do you actually do some of this work and grow stewardship as a whole congregation? So I'm going to give you some very tactical pieces and would also remind you that I am always available to any of you and all of the congregations to come in and do this kind of work directly with the congregation. So we can do a workshop like this, we can do some training, and we can have some conversations. So you don't have to do it on your own. You're not alone in this. But I do want to give you a little bit of an idea of how you can do some of this in the congregation. And then I want, Drew and I want to have a conversation about how he's seeing this happening and what it looks like at a sort of case study level. So what happens when you actually want to go build some of these stewardship structures in the church? Well, the first thing that you want to have is a dedicated group. You really want to have a stewardship team, right? And I would say this is not the finance team necessarily. And this is not just the campaign team who's doing an annual campaign for the church, but an actual stewardship team who is committed to building and bringing a conversation about stewardship to the life of the church all the time. And when I say a team, if you're a small church, as many of our churches are, it can be one person who's particularly committed to doing it, but is working with session, is working with the pastoral leadership, so that this is a conversation and an engagement model that's ongoing. And that leads us to the next piece. You've got to have session support for having stewardship conversations, for having conversations like this, because if you don't, then it's just one person on an island. And what you really want is this to become what we call a culture of generosity within the church, right? That everybody is living this all the time. You need to have pastoral support, right? Again, this is about being connected. If you are a pastor and your feeling is, I don't want to have anything to do with this, this is someone else's job, I'm going to challenge you and say, this is all of our jobs in different ways, right? Because we're all always giving time, talent, treasure, testimony. So how can you be involved in a way that is supportive of helping people grow in what stewardship means to them? You do want to think about this again, ongoing, right? So this is not a, what is the campaign we're doing? That's a component of it. But how are we having this conversation year round, all the time? And I can tell you, I know when I say that, people think we already have so much to do and not enough volunteers. And how are we going to do one more thing and do it all the time? It's actually not as hard as it sounds. And I'm happy to work with you on what would an annual plan actually look like. I will also make a shameless pitch for Stewardship Navigator, which is a tool from the Presbyterian Foundation. It's not really a pitch because it's free, but you can access it through our website, and it has annual plans in there. What should you be doing? How can you be doing it? How can you have these conversations? And the tool is actually about to get a whole lot better because we're adding templates for all kinds of things, for letters, for thank you notes, for sermons. So it's a great resource in addition to other things to take advantage of. Again, you're not alone in doing this. You want to think about also, and this could be further conversation at some point, how you start to build in legacy conversations to the ongoing conversation about stewardship. They're not different and they don't compete with each other. Because if we think about our lives, not as a linear form, but we think about them as how we are connected in spirit from before birth, through our life, through our adulthood, and then off into spirit again, right? Then legacy is really about what are we energetically doing here today that we then want to take with us into our life and spirit and leave behind for the generations that are to come. So starting to have that conversation as a part of the, how am I a steward in the world, is not different. It's just another aspect of it, right? And pitching Stewardship Navigator again, there is a whole plan giving module in there that has how to have these conversations, how to do this in your church, right there with tons of resources. One of the things that you want to do, that you want to start thinking about, and this again fits into all these other pieces, is sharing your story and making space for other people to share their story, right? So if we're having this conversation and we're making space to talk about it year round, part of it is asking people to talk about exactly what you just did in your breakout groups. As a minute for mission, or as a discussion group within the church, what is stewardship to you? And you can use all these questions and this whole model to start having that conversation in the church. But asking people to share their story and to start to have it be a way of intentionally engaging with the world, not just something that you're passively doing or reacting to. Those are personal stories. And those are church stories. That's the using a narrative budget to tell the story of the mission and the ministry of the church, not just the financial status, but what you're actually doing as a church. And if you've never done a narrative budget before, we also have a narrative budget builder in Stewardship Navigator. You can use it. It's a great place to start. And it really does allow you to tell the story of the impact the church is having in the world. And finally, one of the things you're going to want to build in to how you're operating within the congregation and how you're operating with you in your own life is by actively engaging in gratitude, right? This can be personal gratitude, And there's a lot of ways you can do that, but it's also expressive gratitude. Building into the culture and the function of the congregation, saying thank you for things. I hate to make this suggestion that pastors should be writing thank you notes. Like, maybe you could write one a day, because I know that pastors are overwhelmed with a lot of the things that they're doing. Session is too, but they should also be doing this. And I suggest that for the first 5 minutes of every session meeting, every session member writes a thank you note to someone in the congregation for something that they've done. And it can be as simple as, thank you for smiling when I walked in to worship the other day. That really was important and it lifted me up, right? So it's just building this habit. It's an exercise or a spiritual discipline of acknowledging what it is that we're grateful for and acknowledging that in other people. And the objection that I hear most often to this is, well, we don't do this to be thanked. That's fine. Like, you might not do what you're doing to be thanked. That doesn't abdicate my responsibility for appreciating what you're doing. So this is more about me being appreciative than it is about you needing me to appreciate you. So these are some things that you can start weaving in. You don't have to do them all to start with. I know sometimes it can feel overwhelming. So pick what's right in your congregation. Also know that I am available, call me, and we can right size how we start to build and grow this as a foundational principle in a congregation.